Hey, welcome to the Out of Spec podcast. As if we don't talk about cars enough through all of our other outlets, we thought we would add the podcast to the mix. And I can say welcome back because this is our second episode. Check us out on Twitter at Out of Spec. That's all underscores. And myself, I'm Jordan at Jordan underscore Schieffer. With me, I have Kyle Connor at It's Kyle Connor and Ben Spreen at Benji underscore OOS. And Mike Breeling at M underscore Breeling. And we have a number of topics to hit today, including some driving of all the Dodge Hellcats, but also on the EV spectrum. We've got the Tesla full self-driving subscription. We've been driving the Audi SQ5 Sportback, Model Y. Formula E has happened recently. So lots to talk about. Let's jump right in with what have we been driving recently?
Yeah, well, call on one of us. Who would you like to hear from?
Kyle, what have you been driving?
Been on a road trip, same as last show, still on that trip. And for those who are unaware, we are taking our Winnebago Rebel, which is like a new Sprinter van with a lift kit and off-road tires, and then a house shoved into the back of it. And we are taking that all the way from Colorado to LA, San Francisco, back to Colorado, then to New York, then North Carolina, Florida, and now we are on the way back to Colorado, finishing this trip off tomorrow. I am sitting in a Cracker Barrel parking lot, as it was the most convenient place to do this show, to get some good internet, good food, well, marginal food, and overnight parking. So that was awesome. And yeah, I've been driving a few things. You know, I started doing this sort of like EV ownership update series where you know, while I love combustion cars and can talk about them all day long, I also love EVs, and a lot of my family members own and drive electric cars. So Alyssa, my girlfriend's mom, drives an ID4. I did an update video with her. Big views on that video. A lot of people very interested in ID4. Then I did another update with her grandfather and his Model 3. 86 years old, driving a Tesla like it's nothing. Pretty impressive. Cool video. You can learn about his aviation past, basically flying planes directly into typhoons. I thought that was cool. And then went down to Florida to visit my mom and spent a few days. I stole her Tesla Model Y dual motor, so long range, all-wheel drive, and have a lot to say about that car. I think it's, you know, just as good as Model 3, better than Model 3 in almost every single way. But two things really bug me about the Model Y. It's very firm, quite a harsh ride, and the steering ratio is way too quick. Other than that, a near perfect car to just like have in the garage to bum around. Really love that thing. Great power. No need for a performance, especially as the performance doesn't have track mode. Even though someone at Tesla who's very high up, who's very popular on Twitter, said that it would get track mode. It doesn't have it. So don't buy a performance. That's silly. Just buy a dual motor and pull a wheel speed sensor. And I drove that around for a while, and it was great. Very efficient. For the new software on those dual motor cars, man, you hit 60 miles an hour and they rip. I think a 60 to 120 mile an hour race between a dual motor and performance would almost be neck and neck. Never experienced that in a dual motor. Hers is not uncorked or anything. Man, did that thing shred up to about 130, allegedly, and was very impressed with that car. And did charging tests with it, so you'll be seeing a video coming out on our channel from a 0 to 100% DC fast charging curve analysis I like to do with every EV, and that was a very interesting test. So that's what I've been driving. How about you, Ben?
Well, I just got my Model 3 back from Tesla service after the parking sensors failed, so I've been driving that.
Oh, so you brought it in to service, or did they come to you?
Oh, they remotely diagnosed it, but I had to bring it in. So it was just a firmware flash to whatever the, I forget which body control module, left or right, that it was on. But hopefully that's it.
Couldn't do it over the air?
No, I think there was an update a while ago, and I saw some people online mention it. And I've just been living without parking sensors for probably 4 months because I've been... couldn't have been bothered to go drop it off, apparently, until now.
That's pretty funny. And how about you, Mike? I know you've been cruising in the e-tron a little while.
Yeah, so still, that's pretty much, that is my daily driver, is my e-tron, and it's a great daily. It's comfortable, quiet, wireless Apple CarPlay, podcasts, Spotify, right there. It's actually pretty efficient on my way into work. It's a lot of downhill, so I get a ton of coasting. That car coasts really well.
Yeah, because it weighs as much as a small planet.
Well, yeah, it does weigh. I could probably get weighted North Carolina plates for that car if I wanted to. It's how much it weighs. Section but that's pretty much all I'm driving. Yeah. And I've not charged it since the last time. You know, last time we recorded, I only charged it about once a week. So.
Really?
So yeah, funny. That's about it.
Interesting. And I do want to mention, my dad hasn't been on the show yet. I'm sure he will at some point. Big car enthusiast, long time. But he is right now driving his new car home from the dealership. I thought it was worth noting. He bought a Volkswagen ID.4. He's owned almost every EV on the market. And now he's trying Volkswagen's take.
That's amazing.
That, so, I'm actually surprised that he bought an ID.4. I would have thought he would have got into it earlier. But
well, I feel like he's like a day one or nothing. And then he's kind of like a Lucid or Taycan or Model S kind of guy. But then he surprises us with these weird oddball vehicles. Like he loved a Prius once upon a time. And he loved, and he loved, what did he have? He had this Kona Electric, two of those. He loved those. So he doesn't necessarily need to be in like a premium car, but he was like, loving this ID.4. I just spoke to him. He's like, it's comfortable. Lane centering's awesome. And he just got a base pro. And yeah, he's pretty pumped about it.
Nice. So who did you say was 86 in driving the Tesla?
Yeah, Alyssa's grandfather is 86 years old with his Model 3.
Yeah, my grandpa is, he has unfortunately no interest in cars. And I tried to get him to get something more exciting. But when he was 90, he bought a Trax, Chevy Trax. And now he's 96 and still driving it, and he loves it. And I'm not sure why, but I guess if you're 96 and still driving, no one can question anything you do, honestly.
Well, I mean, it just shows, you know, look, he doesn't know anything about cars because he's loving his Trax. But isn't the new Trailblazer the replacement for the Trax? I think is what it is. And that is a great car.
Or is that just the Blazer? Which is bigger?
No, the Blazer is bigger, and then the Trailblazer is not as trail focused.
Makes sense, right?
Of course.
The Blazer is great off road, or at least better than a Volkswagen Atlas Base Camp, as Jordan and I found out. We took them on an off roading battle, and your Atlas, you took an Atlas from Volkswagen, and man, was that thing shit off road. Excuse my language. It's deserving.
If your base camp is like your cul-de-sac you live on, and then your adventure is your road around the neighborhood, it's great. But if you want to go on an actual trail.
It was just so bad. And that Blazer, man, nothing could stop that thing. And then, I took the Trailblazer on another adventure, and that was really good, the three-cylinder. So, man, GM's making some good cars, actually, and impressing me. So, Jordan, you've been driving some stuff. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so also from Detroit, but not GM, I went to go do a Dodge SRT event last Thursday.
Hell, brother.
Yeah, I went to Bandimere Speedway, and it was for the NHRA. They had a big race last weekend, and so they had some of the press come out and see, you know, the press conference with the drivers, Matt Hagen and Leah Pruitt, who are, I guess, famous in the dragster world. I don't follow dragster motorsports, but I kind of want to now because it was fascinating. And so I got to ride with them and then ride them or drive them. Like they taught me how to drive down the drag strip, and then I drove down the drag strip. So that was kind of fun.
Do you have any video of that or pictures that we could share? I think we put something up on Out of Spec, right?
Yeah, I've got a video here. Let me reshare this, but yeah, so let's see.
Yeah, we're working through it. It's
shows. While you're doing that, I want to know, what is the biggest takeaway you had with professional coaching of driving in a straight line? I know there's more to it because Kyle and I, we've taken every Tesla we've had to the drag strip because, you know, that's an easy, a relatively easy thing to do with the cars.
But we have taken weird stuff to a drag strip. Yeah, we've taken RDX Turbo to a drag strip with Andrew Benjack years ago.
I remember that. Yeah. I don't think it was fast.
No.
But like, what was the tip or the tool or the, you know, coaching thought was like most interesting that you wouldn't think of maybe?
It comes down to so much of just timing with getting your foot on the gas or really letting off the brake right when that light hits green. And like there's more to it when you get to like the really crazy, like Matt Hagen's famous for his funny car. But yeah, it was interesting. I drove a variety of Hellcat vehicles, including like the, actually I drove my first 6-speed Hellcat Challenger. That was a lot of fun. And I did not stall it in one of the, they had a bunch of instructors from Radford there too. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was teaching me did stall it. So I felt pretty good about that.
Did you do the inverse, which is worse, which is fry the clutch?
No.
Okay. let me just tangent for a second. A lot of people are like, and Ben, you and I have spoken about this. A lot of people are like, I've never stalled a car. And then they pull away at 6,000 RPM. Like, obviously you're not stalling it, but you got 2 seconds out of your clutch there.
Yeah, you got to replace the clutch at 40,000 miles. That's a normal service interval for a clutch. Yeah. Like, I don't think so. I think it should be 100,000 miles, realistically. I don't know what you're doing with it.
Do they have no lift shift, Jordan, where you keep your foot down like that Mustang Mach 1 did?
I don't know if it did.
Well, they probably would have told you if it did.
Yeah, they didn't tell me, so maybe not.
Oh, okay.
But it was fairly limited. As far as the 2 hours I was there, it was limited time in each car. I mean, one of the most impressive was the Durango SRT Hellcat. Like, it's 3-row SUV, and it just throws you back in your seat. And in some ways, it's slower than the Challenger and Charger, but it felt faster just because your mind is not expecting it when you're that far off the ground.
The Durango Hellcat, quick fact, is actually faster than the Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk by a tenth of a second.
How is that possible?
I don't know, but it is.
It's bigger.
I know. Maybe just an just hour down better. How
terrible that Jeep Grand Cherokee chassis is. That's like a 20-year-old E-Class at this point.
Yep.
it's just longer wheelbase. Power. Helps. I don't know.
Well, it looks like a really cool event. So this is something that SRT hosted for like local Colorado car people to come to, or just general media, or what was it?
I think most people there were like motorsport media, so I felt a little uneducated, but it was really cool to talk to them about just how these operate. I mean, the funny car there on the right, this right here, this is Matt Hagen's funny car, about 11,000 horsepower and 80,000 foot-pound of torque, which
that'll
is
do
just,
it.
Yeah, and so it's funny because so he drives this, and then Leah drives a Top Fuel dragster, so the engine for hers is behind her. And so funny car people make fun of the dragster people because they're like, oh, you pansies, if your engine blows up, it's not in your lap like ours is. So that was funny to see them kind of duke it out back and forth. But they were really cool, really entertaining to talk to. I basically proved my ignorance. You know, I was like, hey, Leah, does your husband like cars? And she's like, oh, I'm engaged. I was like, oh, cool, congrats. She's like, yeah, you may have heard of him, Tony Stewart. And I was like, oh, I pretended like I knew exactly who it was. And then I was like, I know that name sounds familiar. And then, yeah, I go tell my dad, and he just basically slaps me. So, yeah, famous NASCAR racer, I guess, is her fiance. So that was fun.
So we sent someone who could really appreciate this event. I'm glad.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You have learned as much if you already were an expert on the subject. That's the whole point, I think.
That's a great point, Ben.
I learned more than anyone else did there. Everyone else was kind of, I mean, honestly, some of the other journalists seemed a little bored, but they had driven all these cars already and, you know, were more interested in the race that was following the weekend versus me. I was like totally smitten with how cool it was. So we'll have a video coming out on this pretty soon.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see that too.
And besides that, I've been driving the Audi SQ5 Sportback, so that's been a lot of fun. Actually, my first Audi
experience. We didn't talk about this last show, did we?
No, I didn't pick it up till the day after. So.
Oh, that's right. So this is, first off, the best color Audi SQ5 Sportback.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's green.
Yeah, me and Timon were talking about this today because it's a very foresty green, but they call it District Green, which is like a very urban name.
So, it's an urban jungle kind of car.
Yeah, it really is. It doesn't look nearly as off-roady as I think I would want my SQ5 to be more off-road, I think. But I get a lot of people like them for the performance, and it is fun.
No one's taking that off-road.
Nobody's taking any Audi off. Not anymore.
But tell us the highlights. How much is it? What's the power, torque? How does it drive?
Yeah, mine was 66.
Do you have any pictures of it?
Yeah, let me pull one out. Mine was 66,000, and it had like the performance pack as well as
So what does the performance pack give you?
Basically, the better brakes and
red brake like counters. Hardware stuff.
Yeah, and I don't remember what all it did.
You get some differential too, like a rear differential, don't you? Like an upgraded one.
Yeah. Upgrade differential, better brakes. I guess carbon fiber like everywhere in the dash. It actually started annoying me.
It's like Kyle's Revel.
Yeah, basically same performance.
Oh, I hate the carbon fiber. Yeah.
I haven't edited all the photos yet, but these are a couple of iPhone shots, and it is a very beautiful green. It's kind of got this like sunset gold color fleck in it, so it looked really good at sunset. I actually like the silver wheels with it, and I usually don't like silver wheels at all, so I don't know.
I disagree with you completely there.
Yeah, I know.
I think I love silver wheels, but I hate these silver wheels.
Yeah, I don't like the design of these wheels, but I'm with you on the silver wheels. I like that they didn't just give you like a black optic package, blacked out one. Though that would probably look good. But I do have a question. Looking at this photo here, are those exhaust tips
fake?
Real? Oh, they are fake. Audi's really good at faking exhaust tips nowadays.
They are.
They look so good until
they look so good.
Bend
Wait,
down.
They're not real.
They're completely plugged behind plastic.
A bumper with like a normal muffler and like curves downward tip.
It dumps out the bottom.
No, I know they do that on their non-S model.
They do it on all of them now.
But they now do them on the. Do they do this on RS cars?
RS6 has normal exhaust tailpipes.
Okay, but how about the RS e-tron GT? Will that actually have real tailpipes then?
No, because it's got no engine.
No, I know, but imagine they could put real tailpipes on the one that doesn't need it.
I can't believe those aren't real. That's unbelievable.
It looks better than a lot of real exhaust, which is so sad to me.
I guess
I'll make a counterpoint for these fake exhausts. Actually,
no.
From a consumer, consumer standpoint, your tips aren't going to get all black and sooty around the edge. And I think for some people, that's something that Audis tend to do a lot of soot on the exhaust. It's just sort of a thing with Audi turbo motors typically. And so this way, they will look nice and shiny and silver for the entire ownership of the car.
Are you alleging that a lot of Audi products have carbon blow by?
I am not, but I would say from my own experience following Audis, whenever they seem to merge on the highway and get on the gas kind of quickly, you always get a little puff of smoke.
That's
clean diesel or clean emissions at work.
Ben, you know the X5 trick with the taillights or the tailpipes, which I think you and I used to spot this when we were on road trips. We could guess if an X5 of the E70X,
the diesel versus gas powered one. Yes.
If it was a gas N54, the tailpipes were black. If it was a diesel, perfectly clean.
Yeah,
exactly. They'd be silver. So I think that's why they're doing that. And they don't look so fake because they look the fake tailpipe has a bit of depth to it. So it doesn't look like someone just put a circle on the back. I kind of see where they're coming from here. Do I love it? No, but does the average SQ5 buyer care? Maybe not. I want to comment on those wheels looking tiny though, because those wheels look really small on that car.
Yeah, it needs the big wheels.
How big are those? 20s. Yeah, this one comes with 20s across the board as standard. Wireless CarPlay is standard. I mean, it was really impressive. As a first Audi experience ever, I was impressed. And it 349 horsepower, 369 pound-feet of torque. I mean, it's a mild
hybrid, isn't it?
It's a what?
Is it a mild hybrid?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, because the Allroad that we had was a mild hybrid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. This has really the, cool.
Yeah, so is the A8, the six-cylinder one.
Yeah, I think this might have an electric turbocharger.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so the way that it works on the...
really good?
That's how I was. So not on Audis. Audi auto start stops with mild hybrid start stop like normal cars, which is weird because everyone does mild hybrid differently. We can do a whole show on this. Some of them do the pancake motor, which help with stop-start because then the pancake motor on the crank basically acts as your starter motor, which is every Mercedes now. And then some of them claim their mild hybrid by having a electric turbocharger to spool things up. And this can spin up like 75,000 RPM in like a tenth of a second. And that's how Audi does it, but it still stop-starts normally. Same with Land Rover. And then there's one other way that is skipping my imagination.
The e-boost thing that Chrysler and Jeep do on the Dodge Rams, that like alternator that's a motor, belt-driven thing.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly.
I just looked it up. The SQ5 is not mild hybrid in the U.S. They do an SQ5 TDI, which is mild hybrid, but we don't.
Well, they should have put that mild hybrid engine in there because that was a stellar engine that we had in
The Q5, the engine sits transverse, so it probably wouldn't work quite that great.
Is it? It's a 3-liter V6, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the same size.
Well, it's just facing the wrong way. You know, there's some packaging and whatnot. While you're fresh on the SQ5, what you need to do is get behind a Macan S steering wheel and see, because those are kind of like sibling cars. And it's amazing how different the two actually drive.
Okay, explain different, Ben.
So for, when Porsche built the Macan, they were told, okay, from Volkswagen, look, you got to be kind of conservative on the price here. We're going to give you some of this stuff. You're sharing this development with Audi. And they're like, sure, we'll do that. And then they changed almost all the hard points, made the engine face a different direction, re-engineered their own all-wheel drive system, put their own dual-clutch PDK in it, and kind of like wrecked the whole let's do this on a budget concept. But as a result, like for... You know, if you're at Audi, I'm sure you'll hear, oh, it's the same as the Macan, but it's a better value. And then if you go drive it, like I've seen people do both, and it's really interesting to actually see because they're both very different in their personalities, but they have this, you know, VW group homogeneity to them almost. But I think it's cool to try and do it just after doing the SQ5, because it'd be an interesting, like, one to the other jump, because you'd be more attuned to those details.
Jordan, come on up to Fort Collins this week, or maybe even tomorrow or Friday, and we'll get you in a Macan S. We have a great Ed Carroll Motor Group who I'm going to pitch to sponsor our podcast. So we're going to plug them now. They are great supporters of our channel and will get us any car we need for any video, for any purpose, at any time. They own Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen right down the street from my house. And so you can drive a Macan anytime you'd like, Jordan.
Sweet. Yeah, I got to compare it now.
Yeah, that would be a good comparison.
But I think I like the standard back better than the sport back, but I get some people really like the sport back. But
no, you know, they don't know.
I have to agree with you. It's not it just kind of makes the nose look really big all of a sudden.
The sport back on the Infiniti I talked about last week was incredible. I think that suited it. But the Audi, I missed the standard kind of CUV back, that real hatchback.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's this trend, and it started with the X6, which is let's make it uglier, less practical, heavier, and more expensive. And it's like, how is that a selling point? And then you get people that are like, give me all my money, you know, take all my money. And I can't figure it out other than when someone rolls up in an X6 or an e-tron Sportback or something, I'm like, I don't want to talk to you. I just already know that we disagree.
Yeah, people obsess over buying CUVs now, and they have for a while because of the higher ride height and the more storage capacity. Well, now they're like, but wait, the Sportback styling is so cool. So basically they want just a lifted sedan. And then pretty soon they're going to be like, check out this lowered CUV that's Sportback. And then they'll be like, that's just a sedan.
A wagon, and it's game over. Just buy a wagon. That's but everyone needs.
There's an argument there, Mike, which is a lot of these CUVs are just wagons now.
I know. My e-tron, when it's slammed on the ground in efficiency mode, looks like a wagon.
Yeah.
It yeah, does. It's crazy.
I think it's a secret way for us to indulge in wagons and for normal people to make it financially viable.
Now, if they made an A6 all-road electric, I would buy it because I love the A6
all-road. No, they already make the best one. They already make an RS6 Avant, which is the only car you ever need.
I know, and I would have one of those too, even though they're not electric at all. It would be terrible.
Taycan Cross Turismo wagon. That could be the only EV you ever need there.
Ben, we got to do RS6 Avant versus Taycan Cross Turismo.
E63 AMG, just throw that in there.
No, that needs to
and the Audi e-tron GT, that new one. No,
that's ugly. It's not a wagon. It has to be the battle of the wagons.
Yeah.
I guess
that's a good comparison.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah, Taycan and RS6 Avant are the two cars I would go and buy today if I had all the money in the world.
I'd love to do a cross-country road trip like to Oregon in the wagons and make this whole thing about a comparison to the 1800s when they were crossing the country in wagons to get to Oregon with the Oregon Trail.
The Oregon Trail? I like that. Covered wagons.
You'd have get to there from really Missouri. Fast in the Audi.
Yeah.
That wagon would be a lot faster than the Taycan wagon.
Yeah. Let's talk about Tesla. Trigger. Full self-driving is now a subscription. So I wanted to talk about this because, we've probably all experienced full self-driving and its various elements over the years. But now that it's a subscription service, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts.
Well, first off, can you explain what autopilot is and how cars still get it? Full self-driving is like a thing on top, and explain to our audience what's going on.
For a long time, when you've bought a Tesla, you could then buy full self-driving, which is really also oscillated in price. I mean, lately it was kind of $8,000 and then it was $10,000 most recently. And that really just gives you kind of the full radar dynamic cruise control with lane keep assist a lot of cars get, but typically much better. Pretty much every car I test has that lane keep assist and radar cruise, and I'd never really trust it versus Tesla's. I've trusted probably the most, at least in normal driving. It's still not. Well, so part of the controversy is it's really not technically fully self-driving, but
not even close.
Gets into legal stuff. And yeah, so it is just a good driver assist feature. I think autopilot was a better name. Just because, that's kind of like what planes do. Like they fly themselves, but
I still think that's a terrible name. So really? Every Tesla comes. So just so our audience understands, every Tesla has autopilot that you buy today. Let's forget about all the iterations with enhanced autopilot and all the other stuff from back in the day. Autopilot 1, 2, and 3.
That is also its own episode.
That's a whole oof.
The history of autopilot, Tesla, 2 hours.
Yeah, every Tesla you buy today has driver assistance features and safety features that are actively working for you. You get forward collision warning, lane departure assistance, all of this is standard. You get adaptive cruise control and lane centering. So you buy a Tesla today, it will autopilot down the highway. And it's awesome. As long as you pay attention and you're staying aware of your surroundings, don't trust the systems like a lot of Tesla YouTubers do and sit in the back seat. That's dumb. But you don't need full self-driving for that. The full self-driving so named package that will never be full self-driving, in my opinion, is basically adding extra features on top of that baseline software solution, which are right now very limited. And up until this point, Tesla was charging an astronomical amount of money for it. It started at, I think, $3,000, then $5,000, then $7,000, $8,000, then $10,000, I think is how it went. And so you buy a base Tesla, you slap $10,000 on the hood, and now all of a sudden, with a flick of a switch, it'll make lane changes for you, and it will summon around a parking lot to come get you. Sometimes it pops curbs, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it runs into people. and I'm trying to think what else you get with full self-driving, but basically lane changes, stopping at stoplights. Navigate on autopilot, which just...
Auto lane change.
Yeah, gets you into the fast lane and then back over.
Auto parking too, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Traffic lights, stop sign control, yeah.
we're talking to me like $500 worth of value. The only thing out of all of this that I care about is lane changes. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree, Ben, as a Tesla Model 3 owner?
I, as someone who had AP1 and then enhanced autopilot and then now basic autopilot that came with the new Tesla, I struggle to see the value in FSD because you're paying $10,000 for stuff my other car did for $2,000, I think it was. But what I find interesting about the subscription pricing is they offer it for cars that have enhanced autopilot. And as far as I can tell, they would gain zero features from that subscription right now. Like, with the exception of if you were in the full self-driving beta, which is what everyone's probably seen YouTube videos of, where it's now doing more city street style of navigation.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Like, my father's Model S is an enhanced autopilot. Well, first off, he has to pay for an autopilot computer. FSD so computer upgrade, even though the car was FSD ready when we bought it, but that's a different story somehow. So he would pay $1,500 upgrade and then $99 a month, and it would gain him. And I mean, unless traffic light and stop sign control be maybe the only thing it would gain. I don't think it's doing that. That's it for $100 a month. And
wow,
the exception would only be the FSD exclusive beta that is kind of the big news, but not everyone's a member of that. So buying this doesn't guarantee you that.
So what basically this is, of course, we can talk about features. We can talk about the ethics behind the naming. We can talk about the usefulness of the system and how good or bad it is. That's a big topic. The big thing to me, though, is we are now seeing Tesla's business model and the business model for automotive in many ways changing from a purchase up front and bring it back to the dealer to service, where now software is the service provided with the vehicle. It's software as a service. And that means that Tesla, you'll give them a big chunk of money up front, and they're going to start collecting monthly payments for literally nothing back in. And I think that as a company investment, as a way to capture the minds of these enthusiasts, is fantastic. And by the way, I think that auto lane change to me is worth $200 for a big road trip. I'm not ever going to put 10 grand on the hood of my car, total it, get zero extra value, and then have to spend 10 grand on the next one because they won't let me transfer it. I'll spend $200 for the month I'm going to take my car across the country and then turn it off. Awesome. I've bought in. I love the idea. I think it's an amazing business model choice.
I think it's actually not the worst idea. Like, I'm almost a little tempted to go with the subscription just occasionally for messing with it on my own Tesla. The thing I really just wish was part of it is that you would also gain access to the full self-driving beta that is actually doing stuff that is, you know, closer towards that full self-driving territory rather than just sprinkling extra features on top of the autopilot system.
Oh, but let's not get into that. So we're not going down the full self-driving road. That's a full episode.
Save that for later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, either way, that beta system that is in use, I feel like that's what most people associate with it now, because that's what's grabbing the headlines. And that's not what this gains you access to, which it's not misleading necessarily. I just think it seems weird to prematurely release this subscription before something that's more substantial as far as feature completion is available to utilize with it.
So, Jordan, if you were buying a Tesla today, would you spend $10,000 upfront to buy full self-driving, or would you go and spend $200 a month on the features when you needed it?
That's hard. What's the math where that breaks even?
So you're saying you would just keep it as a recurring $200 a month?
I either that or like only really use that when I know I'm going to use my Tesla for like a long road trip, or I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. I don't feel like I care that much about the features over autopilot yet. I understand the promises Elon's made, and those sound really intriguing, but just like anything else, you shouldn't buy a product based on the promises of what it could be. That's been something exploding in the tech world lately for some reason. I mean, smartphones, home theater receivers, all sorts of things have been coming out with like, oh, it's going to support this in a software update soon. And then it just hasn't come to fruition.
It's just an excuse for them to get the headlines and then not have to back it up.
Yeah,
rush
yeah,
it out.
Which is frustrating.
first adopters.
I don't know if I would spring for it in either way. I think it's cool. I mean, I think auto summon is a lot of fun as like a party trick, but in terms of real life usability, I don't know if I'd care that much for most of these until like auto steer on city streets starts coming out. And
let me frame it to you another way. How would you like a Tesla and then a really nice track Miata NA? Right? Or would you just like to have a Tesla? I mean, that's the thing. 10 grand buys a lot of race car.
Yeah. I don't think I could justify a 10 grand on it. The subscription piques my interest, but at the same time, that 200 a month is like, a payment on like a $15,000 car easily.
I'll tell you a smarter move Tesla could have done, which is spend the 10 grand now and it transfers to your next Tesla.
Yeah, that's how it should have been, and it's not. That's a lot of people who end up selling their car, they lose out. I mean, I know that they lose out. You usually don't get your 10 grand back on any value. Like if you're going to trade that car in, nobody really adds the value for the full self-driving because there's no guarantee that that will even be on the car for the next owner.
Even better than that, I love this one. When you bought a car from Tesla with full self-driving and then traded in back to Tesla, they would then remove the full self-driving and make the next owner pay for full self-driving again at the higher new price.
Oh, I'm not surprised. So with this subscription, let's say, I mean, it was brilliant because they're going to get thousands of people to sign up and they're going to make a lot of money just off like easy money. But if you have the subscription long enough and it pays for $10,000, do you then get full self-driving?
No, it's not a rent-to-buy situation.
Okay. I was curious. I was like, I don't think it is, but someone asked me today and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that doesn't
they wouldn't
work that
need
way.
To do that. They'll get someone who spends two years writing $200 checks and then goes and spends at that point $13,000 on this thing.
I think the subscription actually makes sense for more Tesla owners in general, just because you're not putting that huge capital out front that you're not guaranteed to get back. Do you remember who it was? Someone we knew tried to trade in there. I think it might have been a 3 or an S. And Tesla said that, and they were like, oh, is that correct? The number, the trade-in number seemed low. And they said, but it has full self-driving. And then the person had emailed them back saying that full self-driving isn't taken into account on Tesla trade-in values, which I recall finding like really shocking, actually.
That seems to be.
They never utilized it.
Yeah, but I'm sure that changes. True. By the way, I went to go look at, I own a 2019 Tesla Model 3. It's a performance trim with all the options except full self-driving, of course. And I went to look at my trade-in values this week. I have about 90,000 miles on my car, something like this. And Carvana offered me $26,000. Tesla offered me $35,100 because it sounds better than the base 35.
Oh, yeah.
Which is interesting because my rear-wheel drive long range, they gave me like way more than that for, I think. So they gave me a lot of money for that car to trade in. And then Vroom came in hot at 36. And I thought that was a pretty impressive price from them.
I think everyone's looking at their trade-in values right now. I mean, even I did briefly. I would never sell my Miata, but I was curious. I bought it 2 years ago with half the miles. And Carvana will give me more than what I paid for it.
Oh, yeah. Right now's the time to sell.
It's
just
crazy.
Sell whatever it is and get the most amount of discount on a new car. It's the best time to do it.
Well, you're not going to be able to get too much on a new car, really, because it's
you go for as much as you can.
But yeah, exactly. If you feel you got a good deal, then it's a good deal. But Tesla is just going back to your Tesla trade-in value. Teslas in general have always tended to hold their value well, at least Model 3 and the newer Model S's and X's. The older Model S's, not as much because they're just getting out of warranty now and people are nervous about the battery and all that and the drive
units. And Hoovy just bought one with that needs like 30 grand or something ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Rich from Rich Rebuilds just had someone send him one that Tesla, or I think it was Tesla, quoted 21 grand to put
it was a Model 3 and they fixed it for a few hundred dollars.
Yeah. And he just had a Model S show up after that, like just today, I think. Someone sent him one from across the country to fix. Yeah. So, but Model 3s, though, right now, they're holding their value extremely well. Even like the standard ranges or the original long-range rear-wheel drives, which doesn't matter the miles. I mean, they're all generally seem to be around $40,000 or more, which is more than what it was new. And some of those cars had tax credits on them if you bought it new back in the day. Kyle, you're muted.
Pre-pandemic, my mom made like $5,000 on her Model 3, and now her Model Y is worth exactly what she paid for it 13,000 miles ago.
Especially the Model Y. I guess people just don't want to wait. Like, instead of buying a new one, they're like, oh, I'll pay a little more to have one now because instant gratification is a thing.
I don't know. I think that's played up. I bet you could walk into a Tesla store and just be like, find me an inventory car.
I think so, too. I mean, I've read stories of people who've ordered their car, and then a day or two later, Tesla's called them, be like, hey, we found this car in your exact spec. It's here.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about BMW Z4, and actually not technically our side of the pond news, but this headline grabbed my attention and also relates to something else we've been driving lately, the Toyota Supras. So the Z4 with the manual is dead in Australia after only two were sold in 2 years. No one wants a manual transmission, apparently.
More interestingly than this, can you scroll down a little bit and read the byline?
Yeah, it was outsold.
Does Mercedes make a new R63 still?
No,
I don't think so. That's got, look, and the NSX, well, that's new, but Mercedes definitely doesn't make an R63 anywhere.
Not for any market.
No.
Jordan, is this platform. How can a Mercedes R63 outsell a manual Z4, which we never got the manual Z4 in our country anyway?
Yeah,
But the more interestingly, how did the R63 come into this calculation?
I think it was a random thing that someone who was writing this threw in there, and they were like, this is fascinating. Because, yeah, I guess an R63 was still on some lot somewhere. Like, it wasn't outsold by much.
I think they were just talking total production numbers, because, like, there's no new R63s left. We're talking about 2012, 2013, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. And,
I'm sorry. Since 2019, they only sold 370-ish Z4s in Australia, and just two of those were manual since 2019. Yeah.
That's pretty sad. So it is, I don't know. I would love to drive this car. I mean, Kyle and I had the new Supras. We had both the 2-liter and the 3-liter at the same time, which was a lot of fun to compare. And I ended up writing and talking about how I would actually pick the 2-liter. I was really proud of this title. The 2-liter was like genuinely my favorite of the two. Although the 3 was so fun, but I was like, man, if this 2-liter had a manual, I would probably figure out how to tweak my life around to buy it. It was that awesome to me. I don't know, Kyle, what do you think? We kind of agreed and disagreed in some ways.
I would just get a 3-liter and slap a big ass tune on it in a straight pipe and lay big ass 11s everywhere.
Now, I have a question for you about the 2-liter. If it made, I don't know, 100 horsepower less, would you still be interested in it if it was offered with a manual? But you could get the auto for all the higher power versions. So 180 horsepower manual, would you want it?
Probably not. I felt like it was so well balanced, and I know plenty of people just basically flash tune it and immediately get 300 horsepower, 300 torque versus 255 from the factory, because that engine can handle so much more than it's given. But the Supra is just like 100 horsepower less would be 150, 160, which is what my Miata makes, but it's heavier. And
yeah, that wouldn't be good.
It would not be as fun. That is
the secret to this Z4 headline, because they said the manual's only offered on the Z4 20i, which is if it's like a 320i, what's that, 180 horsepower motor?
Yeah, less than 200 horsepower.
It's not very much. So I think BMW kind of did this to themselves a little bit by saying, hey, we've offered the manual for sports car enthusiasts. And then they said, but it's with the least powerful engine we can produce. So kind of like...
I I think
are they trying to prove it's not popular? It's like, are they making a point or?
I think the two would be so great with a manual, and I loved the three, but I think it'd be hard to manage with a manual. It was just like too much. It was a phenomenally fun amount of power, but like a manual would have been in your way driving it versus the two felt very fun and engaging, and a manual would have enhanced it. It's kind of this weird balance I think they struck. And so I'm still thinking they may have a manual at some point. I mean, Toyota's committed to yearly updates on these. Although the 2022 update is really disappointing, just the CF edition, but it's
carbon fiber.
Yeah. Carbon fiber. Woohoo. We love that. I don't know. That is a bummer, and that's, you're right. They basically sabotaged their own Z4 by putting the manual in, honestly, an underpowered engine for the car. It's just too heavy of a car for that engine.
Well, let's be honest. If you're interested in the sporty BMW, you're not buying the Z4 anyway. You're going to buy an M2. Yeah. And then in that, I'm sure there's a high percentage of money. Yeah. You just go M2 all day long.
Expensive.
I like it.
I mean, I like the way it looks.
Yeah. And I would actually consider it over a Supra because I didn't think the Supra was that sporty. Like, it's not like a track kind of car. I'm not going to like go shred it. So I want to go have fun in the Supra on a back road, which is then like maybe I'll just drop the top and get a GT convertible type thing. And the thing that's so special about the Z4 and so special about the Supra is that you sit almost on the rear axle. So any hint of rear axle movement feels like big skids, but you're only doing these little things because you're swinging around back there. Really special car, cool things. I mean, just to knock the Supra really quick, the 2-liter overheated on me on my drive. And I don't think I was the only person that happened to. And the 3-liter cooled itself just well and was awesome, but it did get heat soaked still. So you could add more power, but you lose thermal longevity by doing that.
Yeah, I agree. It's if the 2-liter had both the manual and, you know, if they did the target top like they did in the Mark IV, I'd buy it. But otherwise,
my grandfather had one of those new, so cool. Oh, I remember being a kid rolling around in that thing.
That's the goal. I mean, I have to have an open top, like either a convertible or a Targa, but I'd prefer a convertible. So Z4 would be my choice as well, especially because, yeah, if I want a genuine track monster, it wouldn't be a Supra because, yeah, they didn't do too well for us.
Well, the 2-liter was better for short track work just because it could turn in way better. You know, in terms of a tactile car for like autocrosses, 2-liter all day long. But screw it. Just get the 3-liter and do skids.
That's all that matters.
That I will say that nitro yellow was extremely attention grabbing. I mean, driving around downtown Boulder with that, everyone stopped what they were doing and just kind of followed with their head. And most people just didn't even know what it was. I loved it.
I have never driven a car, maybe other than a Morgan 3-wheeler, that got nearly as much attention as this thing did. And I've driven some spicy cars, and this is like people screaming across parking lots and just losing their minds, racing you. I had a dude in a truck literally just doing pulls with me over and over, allegedly, and just absolutely shredding. And I'm in a Toyota. Like,
yeah,
it was amazing.
If you're in a Z4, that wouldn't happen.
Never.
I do wish the 2-liter had better exhaust sound. I know that could be remedied aftermarket, but the 3-liter exhaust was pretty awesome. But the 2-liter, I mean, since the engine's smaller and just shoved back further, it's technically front mid engine. I mean, did you feel any difference with that for the handling, Kyle, or is that?
Oh,
just
night and day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about. How it just gets into corners way better on track. Totally different balance on the car. Way more tossable. But for me, I still would go 3-liter. I mean, I see your argument for the 2-liter. It's more fun and more tactile. But, like, I don't know. I guess I don't do that much tactile driving. I do a lot of, like, let me try and slide around kind of driving.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I was pretty smitten. And, I mean, obviously coming from Miata, I was like, wow, this trunk is huge.
Great trunk space. Everything about this car was amazing. And Mike, have you driven a new Supra yet?
No, not yet.
We got to change that. I was really had a blast.
I know. I really want to drive one. I've been interested in one like since they've come out, just to drive one after watching videos on it. I've sat in them, just never driven them.
I mean, what's crazy is the second model year, they still didn't fix the wind buffeting. Have you guys heard of that? Just it famously, if the windows are down at any speed, like 35 or 40, it kills you with the buffeting. And this
the worst thing I've ever experienced in a car, like the biggest design oversight.
Yeah, this tiny deflector here, aftermarket in the right photo, fixes it. And Supra or Toyota hasn't done that yet, so they're just relying on people to stick things on their tiny little.
They probably have to wait for BMW to engineer one first.
at what speed did you say the buffeting starts? Because I've all seen deflectors like all of it. Oh my god! I've seen it's big in the Porsche world for people to do that on 911s, but that's because some tracks require you have to have the windows down when you run the track. But those are like 125 mile an hour speeds people are complaining.
Top of first, it buffets.
Yeah.
So shout out to the buffeting removal deflector.
I would just drive around town in first gear, and it was in my head.
Yeah, I mean, if you Google Toyota Supra forum, and then that'll autofill is like wind buffeting is fixed. but yeah, I don't know. It's still awesome. Great JBL sound system. I love how the subs have like the wheel spoke design on them. I was really in love with this car. More
sounds like you should buy one.
Yeah, why aren't you buying one? You're so in love. Go get one.
Because nobody's buying them anymore. They were buying them.
I'm holding out for manual or Targa or both.
No, but here's the best part about a car. You don't have to keep it. You buy the auto, the manual comes out, and then you get the manual.
Well, I'm so happy.
There won't be a manual.
The Miata. That's just like nothing's been able to pull me away from that yet. So
this sounds like the Supra is pulling you away.
Yeah, Timon, one of our videographers, almost bought a Supra, but he bought a motorcycle instead, which I guess is just as exhilarating.
Yeah, in a different way.
Sure, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, what else do we have going up? We're nearing the end of the show. Do we have some big stuff we want to get to? We spoke, Formula E last week, right? Or no, maybe not.
We
might have touched on it, but we didn't really dive into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it, so I don't know too much about Formula E.
I was there. I know from our man there. What's the future of motorsports like? Everyone's like, I could never watch motorsports without engine noises, but you were there. I heard videos of those things. They made some interesting sounds still.
There's noises, yeah.
Well, I can't even watch motorsport with engine noise. So maybe I was the wrong person to go.
Ben, you should have gone.
I have the same issue. I'm only really interested if I'm doing it.
Exactly. I don't know.
Well, every time I've gone to a racetrack, I'm enjoying snacks and shopping for like random gifts and stuff. I can't.
Look, to be honest, it's a networking event. You know, I go there, I run into a whole bunch of people. We start talking. Oh, the cars are going around the track. It's hot out there. No one wants to go out there. I'll take another martini, please. Yeah, another whatever it is. We're doing wine tasting with the cars going around the track. Because the problem with these city tracks is you really only get a little tiny glimpse of whatever they're doing, right? So it's and then no one has a crash in front of you, so it's not exciting. Okay, but that's the negatives. And that's just me being a little bit silly. Seriously, though, the innovation, the work, the amount of effort by the teams and manufacturers, most importantly, going into electric racing is seriously exciting. I'm more of a rally fan myself. This whole new electric rally series seems awesome. But the cars are getting better. Ativa, the main battery pack supplier, which is basically Lucid, is getting a ton of real-world, high, heavy use case charges. The calendar for next season is going to be amazing. A lot of cool cities we're going to go to, and we are going to go to them. We're looking for someone to cover these races for us. So if you either A, don't have a job that would restrict you from traveling, and B, want to cover Formula E races, let me know, because we're going to send someone around to all the races for our new electric performance channel, which would be kind of cool. And I really had a great time. It was great to see everything. Next year, they're going to be charging midway, at least as an option. I think it'll be one of those things where you can drive slowly and skip a charging stop or blast and charge. and charging curves and peak charging speeds all going to play a role in this. And our friends at ABB, really good friends at ABB, sponsor the entire Formula E series, and they're also going to be providing the charging of all the vehicles for next season. So we're going to go in depth on their solutions. If you don't already, listen to our Inside EVs podcast, because on Friday or tomorrow, the day after this podcast goes live, Dan O'Shea from ABB is going to be joining us, and he's head of charging for them. He's going to explain how they're doing everything here for Formula E, or at least we're going to try and get as much info out of them. Either way, the cars are really stupid fast, and it was very competitive. I'll say that much.
I mean, it sounds like it's going to get even more interesting next year with the charging aspect of it. That is cool, actually.
Well, now it gets into like our road tripping, right? Or cannonballing, especially. Yep. It's, do we go slow and skip charging stops, or do we rocket chargers? And when do we charge? Do we wait till the battery's dead? Do we go midway? I mean, what's the strategy?
Yeah, will there
and
be so, a difference?
You know, if I ran this race, I would, because no one would care. This would be only the Kyle Connor race. I'd make everyone start dead.
And charge first before going out of the track.
How is your 5% state of charge?
Yeah. Well, it's, do you stop twice and do 250% charges, or do you just do a full charge? And you know, this could all be part of a race no one would watch. And starting. Okay, so
charging.
All right, let's hear from our commercial break partners for the next 30 minutes.
My funny mental image is them pulling in, doing a, you know, amazing 7-second pit stop, and then everyone just sits and waits for about 15 minutes while it charges.
That's exactly how it
would go. Tires in 1.6 seconds like Formula One, and then it's like, yeah. So you want to go grab a bagel?
But I have to say, I really wish they would get out of this whole city track mentality, because getting to this track was a pain in the butt going through Brooklyn, like no hotels, no parking. I just went home to Connecticut. I actually had a hotel booked in Brooklyn available, mine. I paid for it, and I didn't stay in it because I couldn't find a place to park.
Yeah, I can't do that. Colorado Springs did it right. I mean, the Pikes Peak Speedway is annoyingly far away if you're in Northern Colorado like us. But it is not in the city whatsoever, and I love that. I'd love to go to one of these at some point. I mean, yeah, I haven't paid too much attention in motorsport until like that Formula One Drive to Survive show came out on Netflix. And then I was like, wow, this is fascinating. I mean, it's full of drama, full of intense, you know. Yeah, it's just really interesting, and I never gave it too much notice. But I'm now interested.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's a cool thing. We'll be covering more of it. And, look, Formula E, I don't know. It's interesting, but I don't think it's going to have mass appeal.
Not for a bit. Well, shall we call it there, boys?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty much good. We got through everything. I mean, Mike and Ben, anything interesting going on with you guys recently that you want to talk about?
Nothing new too much, really. Just trying to go to work every day.
I personally think sweating I'm going to end up with a Rivian at some point. That's the daily struggle right now, is the spec.
Let's have a Rivian topic for next week's show.
Yeah.
Talk about where the company is, their delivery estimates, because they just recently had a delay, I should say.
Yeah.
And, I think that would be really good to have. Also, wanted to mention for our viewers, specifically in Europe or that are familiar with Europe, I will be in Munich for the first couple weeks of September, and I will be filming a whole bunch of different cars, specifically EVs is what I'm trying to focus on, European EVs that we don't get here. So I've already booked ID3, Honda E, I think Fiat 500e, RS e-tron GT, and some other stuff that I'm looking forward to. I kind of want to try like is it the Kia Ceed, or there's also the Zoe, which is extremely popular in Europe. It's like most popular EV, and I've never been in one.
Also, I've heard a lot of good things about the MG ZS. SUV electric. People are loving that too, as it turns out. So,
man, and the MG brand in general, I have no sort of no resemblance with, never been in an MG. I think I used to race them in like Gran Turismo, but like, what an interesting brand. And yes, and Bjorn owns one in Thailand, doesn't he?
I think that's the case as well. Yeah. And I think they do the Skodas. I forgot about that.
It's like a better ID4 from supposedly the worst brand, which makes no sense.
I know. Well, and they've got what Cupra is sort of their sportier version of this, which is again the same platform, but just.
And then you have the Cupra L Born, which is like an ID3 R.
Yeah, that looks really cool, actually. I'm a fan.
That's
of that
a spicy
one.
Machine. I want
to put
that
on the screen for the audience to finish off the podcast, because that's a cool looking way to have an ID3.
Yeah, it's Cupra, Cupra, and then I think it's just L Born, ELBORN. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
There we go. Mm-hmm. So it's an ID3, but like, yeah, exactly, turned up to 11.
I love it.
Yeah, so 77 kilowatt hour battery, rocking fast, all pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. Well, glad to do this show with you guys again. That's really fun every time. I mean, we're going to obviously change it all up. I won't be on every show, but at least for the first couple shows, we got the OG crew here, and it's been fun talking cars for another week.
Yep. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. Check out all of our other stuff at Out of Spec on most platforms. And we're busy and we're putting out content and we're having a lot of fun doing it.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, till next time.